take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, June 12th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We made it to the weekend once again, and it's a beautiful summer weekend. Well, not officially summer yet, not till the 20th, right? 21st? But hey, close enough for us. There's sun shining in Portland, Oregon. That's summer to us. It's been quite a hectic day today. I don't know if you've been following my Twitter feed at Radical Russ, but oh my God, have I stirred up a hornet's nest today. And for once, it's not medical marijuana people that hate me. In fact, it's people that have nothing at all to do with marijuana as far as a issue that hate me today. And if you've been following the news and you caught the story, right up here in the Pacific Northwest, a woman by the name of Rachel Dolezal, I think her name is, I may be mispronouncing that, has been outed as white. She's been a professor of African American studies. She went to Howard University. She's raising a biracial child, and she's the head of the Spokane, Washington NAACP chapter, and apparently had been doing fantastic work there. But her parents came out, and they're both white, and they outed her as white. And sure enough, some of her pictures from her youth show a very pale little white girl. So I started asking some questions about that on Twitter, and oh my God, did I get slammed on Twitter. Things I've learned today is that if you're a white person asking questions about race relations in this country, you can't win. You are an asshole. No matter what you do, no matter how you frame it, you're an asshole. So I can't stop thinking about this. And considering how much race plays into the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs, maybe we ought to discuss this. And you know me, I'm not afraid of people thinking I'm wrong or ignorant or, hell, even racist, although I believe I'm not, at least not much more than any other regular old human being is. But given so much that this is such a feature of this war on drugs, maybe we ought to talk about it a little bit. So in the Radical Rant today, I'm going to give you kind of a rundown of the situation, what the questions I was asking, what's going on with the whole situation, and how it relates to the war on drugs. Also coming up on the show today, and behind the headlines, Australian philanthropists have donated $33 million for CBD research in Australia. Wonder why we can't get that kind of action from our philanthropists here in the United States. Also, in drug war data mining, we've got new figures on the retail sales of cannabis in Colorado. The new numbers are in for April, and we'll tell you all about them. In our activist agenda today, we're going to get a call in from Beth Fox Brown. She is the leader of a new activism group called DAM, Decriminalize American Marijuana Now. And their website is damtoday.org. We'll talk to her about her mission and what their group has planned for their activism. And then stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio, where we will take your calls at 84-420 Radio on the rant of the day and any other topics we happen to pick up along the way. Stay tuned. The 420 Radio news is next. I'm Radical Russ. We'll be right back.
To the Russ Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, freeing your mind 24 hours a day.
420 Radio is brought to you by Sacred Serum, who is focused on creating elegant and sophisticated cannabis solutions through its line of dispensers and vaporizers that come preloaded with the world's finest cannabis concentrate. Sacred Serum's concentrate is made on pharmaceutical-grade supercritical CO2 extraction machines that use absolutely no butane or other toxic chemicals. The Vesica, the company's innovative new way to dab and frost, is now available in dispensaries across California. Sacred Serum, elegance and sophistication concentrated.
Hey, I'm Herb Thrasher, host of Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, live every Friday night at 8 Pacific. Tune in for 2 hours of metal marijuana mayhem featuring exclusive interviews with the latest bands, highlights of live shows, and the latest in marijuana news. It's the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, Friday nights at 8 p.m. at 420 Radio, or catch the replay on Saturday nights.
Come join the fun at the CannaCon Expo, the nation's largest cannabis marketplace for products, services, and ideas. CannaCon is where the cannabis industry does business. CannaCon is coming to the Colorado Convention Center in downtown Denver, kicking off Thursday, June 11th through Saturday, June 13th. Tickets are on sale now at CannaCon.org. That's CannaCon, CannaCon.org. If you're looking for the best deals on growing gear and the most innovative products in the market, don't miss CannaCon. CannaCon will provide you with the opportunity to meet and do business directly and most affordably with the grow gurus and suppliers. CannaCon seminars are designed to be informal, open, and an educational conference where growers, processors, retailers, suppliers, and consultants can frankly discuss issues that impact this thriving industry. Don't miss CannaCon coming to the Colorado Convention Center June 11th through Saturday the 13th. Tickets are on sale now at CannaCon.org.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org.
Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Friday, June 12, 2015. Surveillance video shows a raid conducted by Santa Ana, California police officers at an unlicensed marijuana dispensary last month. The edited video shows officers telling everyone to get on the ground. It also shows officers removing surveillance equipment, but the lawyer for the dispensary says hidden cameras caught much more, including officers eating marijuana edibles and joking about kicking an amputee. Quote, "Did you punch that one-legged old Benita?" End quote, one officer says. Quote, "I was about to kick her in her fucking nub," end quote, a female officer replies. Marla James volunteers at the Sky High Collective. She's legally blind and says several medical issues keep her confined to a wheelchair. She now plans to sue the city for the actions of the female officer in the video. James's lawyer, Matthew Pappas, alleges the video shows officers playing darts and eating what he believes is marijuana edibles from the store. House Republicans advanced a budget plan Thursday that would prevent legal sales of marijuana in the district until at least 2017. Advocates for legalization, however, called it a victory. What the Republican budget does not do yet is roll back Initiative 71, the voter-approved measure from November that legalized pot for recreational use in the nation's capital. Since early this year, D.C. residents have been allowed to grow, possess, and in the privacy of their own homes, smoke marijuana. Last week, the House approved a bipartisan measure to protect state medical marijuana programs. For only the second time, it instructed the federal DEA not to target state dispensaries or medical marijuana manufacturing or distribution facilities. The House also told the DEA to leave alone the states that allow sales of cannabinoids or CBD oils derived from cannabis plants. House lawmakers also moved to protect production of hemp for industrial purposes. From January to May of this year, 15 people have died from using synthetic cannabinoids, a threefold increase from that period in 2014, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, said in a report issued Thursday. The number of calls to poison centers about the substances has also skyrocketed in the past year, confirming the federal government's view that this is a growing public health threat that needs to be stamped out. From January to May, poison centers in the United States reported 3,572 calls related to synthetic cannabinoid use, according to the CDC. That's 229% more than the number for that period last year. A 2012 government survey found that 1 in 9 high school seniors in the U.S. had used synthetic cannabinoids, the second most commonly used illegal drug for that age group, behind marijuana. More than 17,000 synthetic cannabinoid-related reports were filed to the DEA's National Forensic Laboratory Information System in 2013, compared with just 469 in 2010. In New York City, misdemeanor marijuana possession arrests were dramatically lower between January and March of 2015 than in the same period of 2014, 2,960 compared to 7,110, respectively. But stark racial disparities persist among those arrested. During the first quarter of 2015, African Americans were arrested for misdemeanor marijuana possession 1,494 times. That's 50.47% of the total. Hispanics were arrested 1,130 times, or 38.18%, and together these two groups accounted for 88.65% of the total. Meanwhile, whites totaled 228 of these arrests, 7.7%, and 79, or 2.67% of the arrestees, are listed as Asian or Indian, according to the state's Division of Criminal Justice Services. New York Police Department officers made 26,385 misdemeanor marijuana possession arrests in 2014. That was down from 28,954 in 2013. Both years, African Americans and Hispanics comprised some 86% of these arrests. Delaware's first medical marijuana dispensary will open on June 26, more than 4 years after lawmakers and Governor Jack Markell first legalized pot for medical use. Patients attending the events and the dispensary's opening must be registered medical marijuana cardholders with the Delaware Department of Health and Social Services and pre-register for the orientations. Some 340 Delawareans carry cards that allow them to use marijuana to treat a variety of conditions and purchase marijuana at the dispensary when it opens later this month. Lawmakers in Dover on Thursday took another step, opening Delaware's medical marijuana program to minors suffering seizures, severe pain, or intractable nausea, among other conditions. This has been your 420 Radio News for Friday, June 12, 2015. I'm Russ Belville. 420 Radio, your ticket to Seattle Hemp Fest. Oregon has joined Washington and Colorado in legalizing marijuana. We're Portland Normal, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws chapter in Portland, Oregon. Join us as we celebrate the launch of an exciting new era in marijuana freedom in Oregon. Our job has just begun. Powerful interests want to white out the most important portions of Oregon's legalization law. By joining Portland Normal, you add your voice to the thousands who voted for Measure 91 and want it to be implemented as written. The people have spoken. Now it is time for the legislature to obey the will of the people. Find out more about Portland Normal at portlandnormal.org. Attend our monthly membership meetings on the fourth Saturday of the month. See our website for more details. Portland Normal, ensuring responsible adult marijuana consumers are afforded the same rights, privileges, and responsibilities as beer drinkers. Normal stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs. The Fingerboard Extension has fretted instruments to enhance your creativity. It has new and used guitars and banjos from beginning to high class. The Fingerboard Extension has National Resophonic, Husson Dalton, Larrabee, Heritage and Recording King guitars, and Mike Ramsey, Wildwood, Gold Tone, and Recording King banjos. The Fingerboard Extension also has drum stuff, used gear, and parts. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis, Oregon at 120 Northwest 2nd, or check out the inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com and reverb.com. Welcome back, everyone. Time for us to go behind the headlines, where we got a story from The Guardian in the UK, their Australian division, pointing out that medicinal cannabis research gets $33 million from grandparents of girl with epilepsy. So there's a little girl, her name's Caitlin Lambert. She's 3 years old. She's got Dravet syndrome, just like Charlotte Feige, just like so many of these little kids that we've seen in America who've suffered this severe form of epilepsy. Causes hundreds of seizures a week. Barry and Joy Lambert are her grandparents, and they've just donated $33.7 million. Yeah, $33.7 million to the University of Sydney to fund medicinal cannabis research. And of course, they say quote, not only for the possible benefit of children with childhood epilepsy like our Caitlin, but also for its potential benefits for a wide range of other conditions that may benefit from extensive research into the cannabis plant. The experience of our granddaughter has opened our eyes to the extraordinary possibility of cannabinoids treating not only her condition, but a range of chronic illnesses that don't often respond to conventional treatments, end quote. That's Barry Lambert, the grandfather, who just donated $33.7 million. And this is just amazing to me. The donation is going to go toward the university's Lambert Initiative. That's going to be for clinical and scientific cannabinoid-related research. And in December, the New South Wales government in Australia announced that it would sponsor clinical trials for cannabidiol. And in March, Queensland and Victoria said they would hold similar trials. So you've got three states in Australia now that are moving forward on cannabinoid research, cannabidiol research, CBD research, and private funders who are kicking in millions of dollars to get this research going. And it just makes you wonder, what the hell do we got to do in the United States for something similar to happen? Yeah, I know, we've got GW Pharmaceuticals, which is studying its Epidiolex and working on CBD and so forth, but this should be being studied at universities all across the country. And our funding system for this, you know, I wonder here if, you know, in Australia, they don't have some of the restrictions on where they get their funding. I mean, couldn't a Bill Gates or a Elon Musk or any of these multi-billionaire philanthropist types, couldn't they kick down some money for medical CBD research? Are we going to have to wait until one of these multimillionaires or billionaires are finally have someone in their family that suffers from this condition before they're going to kick in on this? It seems to me that delaying and denying any research on cannabidiol at this point is a crime against humanity. This needs to be opened up to all of our researchers all across the country, anybody that wants to do it. And of course, they're not able to do it because cannabidiol, despite being something that does not get you high, is still listed as a controlled substance, a Schedule 1 controlled substance, a substance that has a high possibility for abuse, no medical use, and cannot be used safely. We're talking, and folks, when we're talking about THC, when we're talking about tetrahydrocannabinol, the molecule in pot that gets you high, it's still a ridiculous classification. But at least you can see a sliver of logic in the drugs of abuse part. At least you can say, well, THC does get you high. And you know how people are, when they can get high, there's going to be a few of them and they're going to abuse that. I don't subscribe to the notion that's reason enough to ban marijuana, but at least there's a sliver of logic there. But keeping cannabidiol on Schedule 1 makes no sense whatsoever. It's insane. There is no potential for abuse of cannabidiol. Nobody's going to get high on it. Nobody's going to break into someone's house or steal a bicycle to pawn to get the money to buy cannabidiol. It's not something anyone's going to get addicted to. There is no possible route of abuse for cannabidiol. And medical? No medical efficacy? Come on now. It's just ridiculous that we live in a situation, we live in a society, we live under a set of prohibitionary laws where you can film two Sanjay Gupta specials. Or does he have third one now? You can film all these Sanjay Gupta specials. People can see with their own damn eyes the before, a kid racked with painful seizures, and the after, a kid who's taken CBD oil and no longer has seizures. And you can see the medical efficacy. We don't need FDA to tell us this works. We don't need scientists to figure out how it works. It works. It works. Now, not perfectly for everyone, but it works. It certainly has medical efficacy. So it just boggles the mind that since, at least in my awareness, I've been aware of this CBD thing since like 2010. It was Jaden, that kid Jaden, and the father down there in California. And before that, it was Miko Hester Perez and her son with the autism. Her son, he used to eat his shirts. Like, he had this Pica, right? Where he'd eat up his shirts. No longer. Or Jaden, who used to beat himself bloody. No longer. CBD is medicine, and there's no logical reason to restrict any research on this. It needs to be moved out of Schedule 1 immediately.
Unbelievable.
All right, folks, it's 4:20 in Denver, Colorado. That means plenty of people there are enjoying their Rocky Mountain High. I don't know where you might be, whether it be plains, mountains, beaches, deserts, whatever it is, I hope you get to enjoy 4:22. Be right back with the latest retail sales figures for April in the state of Colorado. Four20 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today.
Funky Roller.
What's happening, Groovy Cats? This is your Funk Master of Ceremonies, Big Daddy. And I want you to join me every Thursday night at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, right here at the Funky Roller Ring.
Ooh, yeah.
Your home of soul, funk, and disco, baby.
Funky-licious.
There's always a party at the Funky Roller Ring.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz. Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining. Welcome back, everybody. In the Drug War Data Mines today, we move back to the state of Colorado, where the latest sales figures for recreational and medical cannabis have trickled in, and we've got, unfortunately, well, I don't know if it's unfortunate, it just is, the 3-month increase in sales that we've seen, like January, February, and March, each month had a record sales figure. Well, not this time. Believe it or not, in April, the month that includes 4:20, the sales of marijuana are down. Now, it's just slightly. In fact, statistically speaking, it's like within margin of error, right? There was $42.4 million of recreational pot sold in Colorado in April. $42.4 million. But in March, it was $42.7 million. So like $300,000 less pot was sold. But you know what? Now that I think about it, it may not be that less pot was sold. It may be that the pot is cheaper. I've been hearing tell from people in Colorado that the prices at the dispensaries have been coming down. So it'd be nice to see these figures as the bulk, like how much weight was sold compared to how much money was made on this. And I think as we move forward in our marijuana sales statistics, especially as we have to start comparing four different states that will be selling marijuana, and those states have vastly different taxation schemes and licensing schemes and so forth, I think it's going to be much more illustrative for us to count how much weight has been sold, how much product has been sold. Because one of the things that's coming up here is that there's this need, and it's written into law in Washington, and Oregon's got some of this, is a need to do data collection on what's happening with the legalization of marijuana. And I just worry that if the numbers go down, If the price of pot just keeps getting cheaper and cheaper and the numbers keep going down, that might lead people to mistakenly assume that we're not eliminating the black market. That, oh, see, the money's gone down. Everybody's going back out shopping at the black market. When in actuality, if we know that the amount of marijuana, the weight, the amount of product that's being sold, if that's continuing to increase, then we have a better handle on the fact that on how we are affecting the black market, if at all. And it'll be easier to compare between the different states to be able to see who's selling the most marijuana per capita rather than the money that's made on the substance. And that could give us a better idea of which regulations, which laws, and which taxation schemes are the most effective at eliminating the black market. But given what we've got here, the numbers that are coming from Colorado, we can also tell you that April's medical marijuana sales were $31.9 million, and that was just about the same as it was in March, $31.9 million. This, to me, also kind of bolsters my theory that the prices have just gone down, because the medical prices were already as low as they could be, right? So no surprise that they're not seeing much change from month to month, but with the recreational going down slightly, perhaps that does mean that there's just a price issue there. Now, they're also considering how much money was made on the taxes. $3.1 million was collected for school construction. This is their excise tax that they have on wholesale marijuana transfers. $3.1 million they made in April. That's up from $2.6 million in March. And they never topped $2 million in 2014. But just this year alone, and that's just only counting, you know, the first 4 months, they've already raised $10 million in the first 4 months. The first 4 months of 2014, in all of 2014, they raised $13.3 million, right? So by the time they get the May figures in 5 months, it's likely they will have already eclipsed how much tax money they raised in 2014. And of course, with all the tax issues that are going on in Colorado, they're going to have that one day tax holiday where there's no taxes on marijuana for one day. They have to do that thanks to their constitution. They got this thing called Tabor in their constitution, the Taxpayer's Bill of Rights. They have to do all sorts of things. Anytime there's taxes involved, there's these weird codicils they have to obey. So there's going to be a one day tax holiday in Colorado. And they are lowering the excise tax starting in 2017 from 10% to just 8%. So this is good news. It's good news that they're getting that tax money in for the public schools, because that was a big selling point of Amendment 64. In fact, when Amendment 64 came out, they said that it was going to be $40 million. We'd be able to raise $40 million a year. Well, again, in 2014, they only raised $13.3 million, and that made a lot of our naysayers, our opponents out there, say, see, they promised you the moon. They promised you the moon, and all you got was only $13 million, as if having $13 million more for schools is somehow a bad thing. But with this, reaching $10 million in 4 months, that's on track to make $30 million in a year. It'll probably be more than $30 million, because I think that the trend is going to continue to increase. The closer we get to that $40 million promise, the better things will be. So we're definitely making progress in Colorado. The numbers are looking steady, and I believe that the decline in the overall sales figures is probably more attributable to the decline in the price of marijuana for the consumer than the consumers not buying as much as they used to.
420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
There's so much I worry about as a mom. Stephen Harper thinks that organized crime should continue to profit from marijuana prohibition. Imagine regulating marijuana like alcohol and cigarettes with a strong and clear educational message. making it more difficult for my kids and your kids to access. Drug dealers don't ask for ID. Stephen Harper does not have the kind of judgment we need to protect our children, authorized by the Normal Women's Alliance of Canada.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
Activism begins with ACT. The Rush Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's Activist Agenda.
Welcome back, everybody. In today's Activist Agenda, we've got a great guest joining us, Beth Fox Brown, who is the founder of DAM, Decriminalize American Marijuana Now. Beth, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I got your note about DAM. I thought it was quite interesting. So why don't you tell our listeners what DAM is all about?
Well, thank you very much, first of all, for having me today. Basically, this started because my business partner, who is also my husband and I, we were discussing marriage equality and how accelerated that movement's traction has been. You know, it's just kind of been like dominoes because they changed the dialogue away from approving or disapproving of homosexuality and kind of made it about treating people fairly and with dignity. You know, I grew up in a very conservative town, and there was this view of cannabis users that is steeped in cliches, and opponents use those to justify continuing the war on drugs. We think that, you know, if we can kind of just get in and change people's minds, the people who are just living in this state of kind of misinformation, we can try to help repeal all these antiquated laws and beliefs. We want people to understand that cannabis users aren't those people, but they're your neighbors and your relatives and your coworkers. So that's really our biggest goal.
So like a public relations campaign to kind of get rid of that stigma, to get rid of that fear of cannabis consumers. Is that basically it?
Exactly. And I mean, we think that by removing the stigma, removing the fear, we can get people really kind of behind this movement. And in order to change those, you know, by changing minds, we can, you know, change the law.
Yeah. Okay. Now,
going with that.
I love the idea. I love what you're doing. But I am going to play a little devil's advocate here with you and understand
sure.
that I'm on your side, but I just want to see where you're coming from with this. When I go to the website, damtoday.org, the first picture I mm-hmm. see is you and your co-founders, I imagine, the five women, who to the conservative, you know, mainstream people are going to say, yep, those are pot smokers. Is that a consideration that you're going to put that in their face and say, yeah, we've got tattoos. Yeah, we're pierced. Yeah, we smoke pot. But so what? Explain how that works.
No, I don't. Absolutely not. I mean, obviously, you look how you look. A person looks how
sure.
how a person looks. I think that, you know, by speaking, you know, by being educated on the topic and you know, presenting ourselves as such, we can probably make a really big difference. You know, I think that we have a person who's a dancer. Our members of our group are college educated. They're very eloquent young ladies. And I think as soon as they open their mouths, it's going to be really obvious that looks can be deceiving.
Well, I hope so. And to be sure, you know, I'm not saying don't do this. I think everybody's perceptions and the way they want to attack the prohibition of marijuana can be valuable, can be useful. But you made the comparison to the gay rights movement, how they came out for gay marriage. They didn't put the most and pardon the terminology, Diesel Dyke or the biggest queen up there to be the representatives. They put folks that the mainstream would say, oh, they look and act like we do. And again, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying, what do you think about that?
Well, I think that, you know, a growing number of people, I mean, the baby boomers are kind of on their way out. I have to be honest with you. And I mean, I don't want to offend anyone by saying that either. I think that the millennials are a lot more for them. I almost feel like it's kind of part of the status quo at this point.
Yeah.
You know, having, I mean, there's people, it's not the 50s anymore, and everybody doesn't look the same anymore, you know?
Sure.
So
I see this
less of a concern for me, I think, than it would have been 15 or 20 years ago.
And you may be right on that. And you know, I agree with you on the changing demographics. And I do think that a cannabis consumer aged younger than 30 would happen upon this page and say, wow, it looks really professional. It's great web design. I love your biographies. You guys all have great backgrounds on here. And I think the younger folks would be very attracted to this and very wanting to be a part of this. How do you think this will affect your outreach to older, more conservative people that tend to vote more often than the young people do?
Well, I think that, and actually someone the other day made a really, they actually used the analogy of coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, a lot of cannabis users are really kind of closeted right now because they don't want their grandma to know that, you know, they smoke pot or whatever. And, you know, grandma is the one that's probably going to end up at the polls on voting day or election day. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that when, you know, someone like that realizes that, you know, their granddaughter who comes to visit them on Sunday and, you know, hangs out is, you know, not what they had in mind when they were thinking about, you know, cannabis users. I mean, it's not like a greasy hair, baggy pants guy like hiding in the bushes
under
a bridge somewhere, you know?
Yeah, and to be fair,
and I think that will help to change people's minds. Like I said, once you humanize them, you realize that they are your neighbors or your granddaughter or, you know, the postman, then it definitely, I think, kind of changes people's perspective.
Yeah, and to be fair, I gotta say, Beth, that the two ladies on the right of the picture, they would be Ariel and Calla. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly,
mm-hmm.
but they do have the look of somebody's granddaughter, freshman in college, kind of look. I'm thinking that the other three of you, though, no one's going to suspect that you're coming out of the closet. I think they would have already suspected that about you in the first place. You know, there's no closet to come out of.
But you know what? We are all sisters, daughters, cousins, nieces, coworkers, neighbors. And, you know, I mean, I had my neighbor's key and took their mail and it, you know, he was a fireman and it didn't seem to bother him that I looked this way, even though he seemed pretty straight-laced. So,
yeah.
Like I said, I think that we can present ourselves in a way that could really win some people over.
Well, I think so too. And folks, we're speaking with Beth Fox Brown from the DAM Initiative, Decriminalize American Marijuana Now. The hashtag DAM, the hashtag I am not a criminal are also available. They've got a Facebook page, Twitter, and you can email them as well by going to DAMN today.org, which when you read it out, it's kind of funny, right? Decriminalize American Marijuana Now today.org.
Yeah. Well, you know,
but I imagine dam.org was probably already taken, right?
Actually, I think it might have been.
Yeah, probably. Now, the other thing I like about this campaign is that you're women coming out for this. We've always found that women's support for marijuana legalization is about 10% less than men's support. Is that a specific angle you're taking, or it just so happens you're all friends who are women, but this is really bigger than that?
Yeah, no, it kind of just so happens that we all really just got along and were friends. It doesn't, yeah, it really had nothing to do with the girl or like girl power or whatever perspective.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I mean, I'll certainly use it to our advantage if I feel like I can.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Why not? Hey, has anybody involved with your group had personal experience being busted for marijuana?
I mean, I haven't been busted, but I have to tell you, my father was actually put in jail the day I graduated high school.
Oh my God!
Okay, kind of stuck with me. He didn't get to see me get my diploma.
Oh, that's sad. Okay, and is he incarcerated still, or has he served already?
Oh, unfortunately, he's not with us anymore. But it was, you know, it's still, it's like you're 18, and my dad was just, it was a bag of pot. It was not a big deal.
Right.
You know, he wasn't hurting anyone, and you know, then you miss this, it turns into a family thing. And, you know, people just don't need that. We have bigger problems in this world. We need to take care of this now, get it behind us, and focus on more important things.
Yeah. And obviously that incident had a big effect on you and galvanized you to become this activist that you are.
Of course. I think it would have affected anyone.
Yeah. Now, another thing that we need to mention, make sure that we get everybody aware of, is that this Monday, June 15th, you're launching an Indiegogo campaign to fund national media campaigns. So give people the details on that, how they can help you.
Well, they can go to Indiegogo and check us out. Obviously, it's hashtag DAM or DAM. Basically, we have six different media campaigns, and our initial goal is for $100,000. The first thing that we want to do is get a YouTube channel going, and that'll be our base of operations. The stretched years are for direct traditional media. That'll be aimed at voters who are most resistant. And, you know, so that's really where we're starting. It's kind of developing daily. And, you know, I think a lot of the bigger players are kind of waiting to see what happens once we launch.
Right. But, well, that kind of leads into my next question, which was how much coordination have you had with, say, Normal, Marijuana Policy Project, Drug Policy Alliance, and those groups?
Well, you know, we've actually reached out to a lot of different people, and we've heard back from quite a few, and they've been really just kind of really nice, just, you know, wishing us a lot of luck. And, you know, we think that the groups like Normal and MPP and Medical Jane that are focusing on their strategy to push medical marijuana legislation through is really clearing a trail. And while they're working that front, we're really just excited to kind of forge our own way.
So when you guys are fighting for decriminalization, do you mean that in the standard term of it's still illegal and you can get a fine and a ticket for it? Or is this more like legalization? Let's not punish people for pot.
Honestly, legalization is the ultimate goal. I have to say, though, that I live in Philadelphia, and since the city has passed the decriminalization mandates here, it's just, it's so much better. Last year, I think they arrested 4,000 people for small quantities of marijuana in the city. And when you think about the money that it takes to process people and the effect that it has on them and their families, even if it is just for a couple of days, it's really not worth it. So for me, even, I feel so much more comfortable because, I mean, it just changes things. Like, you don't feel afraid.
That's,
you know,
good.
And it's like I said, one of our tagline is, I am not a criminal. And it's because, you know, we're not.
Right on.
So,
I'm not a criminal and neither are you. It's the DAM initiative. Decriminalize American marijuana now. Hashtag DAM. Hashtag I am not a criminal. They got Facebook. They got Twitter and email as well. We've been speaking with Beth Fox Brown, a founder of DAM. And if people, is this something where people can form their own chapters? Should they contact you for that?
You know, something we haven't gotten that far yet, but I hope that one day maybe we will.
All right. All right. Well, always interested in anybody who's putting together media and trying to change, dispel these misconceptions about cannabis consumers. And y'all look like smart, bright ladies. They're going to do a great job at that. So thank you for doing what you're doing. And thanks for standing up for the DAM initiative.
Thanks a lot, Russ. We'll keep you posted on everything that happens.
Yeah, do. And then we'll have you back on. We'll discuss more.
Great. Have a good day.
Thanks, Beth. Thank you so much. And, you know, one of the other things I like about it is you can say, do you support that DAM initiative? That's kind of cute. I like that. All right, folks, stay tuned. We got a radical rant coming off. We're going to go a little bit off the warpath. Not too much, though. And discuss race relations in America and the curious case of Rachel Dolezal up here in Spokane, Washington. Just what is race anyway? And what can we do about it? Stick around.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio. Tune in, turn on, get high, Lee educated.
Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
Jive, marry, grifo, grass, hay. Technically, it's cannabis sativa, the common name, marijuana. She has found a crutch to see her through her difficulties instead of facing up to them and coping with them. And in time, she may be ready to try something different, something better.
Gateway theory doesn't work. It's a reality.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We are going to dive headfirst into this one, and we always begin with the disclaimer that I am an able-bodied, cisgendered, heterosexual, married, overweight, middle-class American male. I couldn't have more privilege unless you shoved a Bible in my hand. So let's start with that. I may not know what the fuck I'm talking about, but I feel if we're going to have discussions of race and race relations in this country, it can't all just come from one side. And this is where I'm at today. I'm just all worked up about this, and I couldn't wait to talk to y'all about it. It's the case of Rachel Dolezal. And this broke on the Washington Post at 4 in the morning. And the controversy is this woman, Rachel Dolezal, who has been the president, who is the president of the Spokane, Washington, NAACP, and claims to be a victim of hate crimes, and graduated Howard University and taught as a professor of African-American studies. It was reported today that she's white. At least that's what her parents say. Her parents, a couple from Montana, both of whom are as white can be. They've put forth their birth certificate showing that Rachel was born in Montana to these two white people. And they say that while Rachel was a teenager, her decision to misrepresent her racial background may be related to her family and her social justice work. Her family adopted some black siblings of hers, so she grew up with black kids. She ended up going to Mississippi and being a part of that African-American community there. She went to a historically black college, and she became the head of an NAACP chapter. So she has decided and represented herself as a black woman and did so on her Howard applications and did so on her NAACP applications and so forth. So first, let's separate the specific issue, right? This woman committed fraud. I mean, we have a system that's set up, and I can't tell you for sure if this was an affirmative action system at Howard or anything, but as was reported to me by people pissed off at me on Twitter, she was getting a scholarship at Howard that was meant for black folks that had to overcome years of systemic oppression, so it wasn't fair because she's white, she's got privilege, and she went and got that scholarship, right? So let's just be, you know, accurate in the fact that she has been committing a fraud, as we understand that. Now, take it away from the entire, you know, from the specific issue of this one woman, and let's take it more broadly. What is race? Can this woman, who was born of two white parents, have a legitimate claim to being black? Now, the argument I got from some people on Twitter was, no, no, because she hasn't faced the oppression. She hasn't faced the profiling. She hasn't been followed in the store. She hasn't been tracked by the cops. She hasn't been treated like a black person. And what was funny to me is the person who was making these criticisms of me on Twitter posts her picture in her Twitter bio, and they could be in the same family. The woman who was criticizing Rachel Dolezal actually had lighter skin than Rachel Dolezal does. Now, how Rachel got that through tanning or sprays or whatever, it doesn't matter. They both have the extremely kinky, curled hair. And the woman who was criticizing me said, I've had to suffer from profiling and being followed in the store. Well, if you, with your light skin and curly hair, were profiled, why couldn't that not have happened to Rachel Dolezal? Especially if she's publicly describing herself as black. It's almost as if there's these racial police who decide who's worthy of declaring themselves black. And there's just something about this that just is bothering me. Now, a lot of people have made, especially on the conservative side, have made a comparison to Caitlyn Jenner. Caitlyn Jenner, born male, male parts, but inside always felt female. Decided to represent herself as female, and is now treated by society as a female. So, what's the difference? A person can decide that inside they feel female, and even though they still retain the outer display of being male, as Jenner did for years and years and years and years and years up until just recently, that person can decide that inside they feel female, dress themselves up to look female, and even go to the extent of having surgery to resemble a female. But someone who's white couldn't decide that inside they feel black and darken their skin to so that their skin, their body, better reflects how they feel on the inside. Color and curl their hair in such a way so that their body reflects how they feel on the inside. And as soon as I brought that up, oh my God, did the flame war start. I was told it was disgusting to make that comparison and that gender is a fluid spectrum. Well, yeah, I know. I know. I've worked with and count a number of transgender people as my friends. And don't bring that up. Don't ever mention that you have friends of the oppressed class that you've spoken to, because while for some reason we're supposed to listen, I kept getting told that a lot too. Shut up and listen. Park your privilege and listen to the experience of these people. And I said, yeah, I have listened to the experience of black people. Black people are my friends and family. Oh, so you're trotting out your black friends. You're trotting out your black. I'm not trotting out anyone. You asked me to listen to black people's experience. What? I can only listen to black people's experience if I'm not related to them? If they're not my friends? This whole social justice warrior PC left-wing liberal crap is making me ashamed to be a left-wing liberal. Right? This is where me and the righties actually have something in common, because I think, and I've been reading Jerry Seinfeld and Louis C.K. and Chris Rock, all these comedians who say they won't play college campuses anymore because the audiences are so PC, you can't make any joke that's even slightly off color without them freaking out and wanting to ban you and calling it hate speech. How does anyone think we're going to make any progress on race relations and understanding and eradicating racism in this country if the majority race in this country is constantly demeaned and denigrated and shut up whenever they try to ask questions and understand? Throughout this whole conversation, I never came out this saying that, like, I'm the expert arbiter on what is and what shall be. Like I said in the disclaimer, I'm well aware that I've had a coddled, white, perfect little male, cisgender, relationship with society that has kept me insulated from many of the things that women and gay people and black people and disabled people experience. I'm willing to, I'll lay that right on the table. So as someone seeking understanding, you don't go and call that person stupid or ignorant or cast aspersions on their, on why they're asking or what they're asking about. This is part of why we don't make progress on this, is because everybody's so PC and so worried about offending the next person they talk about that they won't broach any controversial subject. It's just ultimately frustrating to me. I've read a couple of pieces now about, you know, it's not right to make the comparison to Caitlyn Jenner. And part of the explanation that was given to me was that race is a societal outside construct that is applied to people, whereas gender is something that's innate and felt within. And that didn't really satisfy me very much. I don't understand how that's an explanation. I mean, if we look back in history, and I do, I love history. I've studied lots and lots of history on this. And this is one thing that really frustrated me, is everybody hating me on Twitter, coming at me as if I'm ignorant, as if I haven't researched this shit, as if it's not an interesting topic to me, aside from the marijuana angle. It's something that's been very interesting to me. Hell, I used to blog for an LGBT blog written by an African-American lesbian. Okay, so I have some experience with these issues, at least discussing them and listening to the people who have these issues, who deal with these issues on a day-to-day basis. What more could I do? So I just got all pissed off today about this. And it's funny when you get pissed off about a Twitter account from someone you don't know who's all the way across the country, but it's just, more and more people started jumping in and piling on, and the next thing you know, I'm white devil asshole for asking any questions. And it seems to me that's part of why we don't make progress on this. And apparently I can only listen if I agree 100% with what the talker is saying. If I have any questions or disagreement, it's invalid. And why this is an interesting concept to me is because race is a mass delusion anyway. There's one race, it's the human race, right? The genetic differences between black, white, Asian, Hispanic, any of those, the genetic differences are so minuscule as to be within the margin of error. Race is a social construct that's been created. And can Rachel Dolezal call herself black when she's got two white parents? Well, what race were her grandparents? What race were their parents? What race were their parents? You know, in America, for a long, long time, they had this thing called the one drop rule. If you had one drop of African-American blood in your body, you were a black person. No matter how white you were, no matter how straight your hair was, didn't matter. You're black. One drop, you're black. So if Rachel Dolezal can trace back her lineage and find a black ancestor, is that enough for her to be black now? Can she be black now? Is there a particular limit? Like, you have to have one black grandparent. Anybody that doesn't have at least one black grandparent can't be black anymore. Is that the way this works? I'm seeking answers on this stuff. And I just can't see. I just think we can't make real progress on this issue if the side that needs to understand the most, Whitey, if we need to understand the most about this stuff, you can't. Now see, I shouldn't say you can't, because then I'm the white oppressor telling people what they should do. But if you want to make progress on this, maybe being more inviting to the people who need education, being more understanding of where their perception is, where they're coming from. But again, the social justice warriors will say that's just me talking to my white privilege, insisting that the black people do exactly what I say or else it's not right. And see, you can't win. I was told I need to listen more to the experiences of black people. And then when I said, well, yeah, I have listened to the experiences of black people, my friends and family, they said, ah, you're trotting out your friends? Oh, I'll bet you have a lot of black friends. Fuck, how are we supposed to make any progress on this?
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
That's all the time we got for today, but we'll talk more about this in hour two. Stay tuned for that. For everyone here at Roland J. Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.